think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 176 of Low Limit Football on this 18th of September, 2017. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and back after a great week of football that saw Champions League, Europa League, and the leagues get back into business. And tonight, we're going to take a look back on the Champions League and Europa League matches from the past week. We're going to go through all our predictions and let you know which ones we got right and which ones also we got wrong. We'll also focus back on league coverage. We have five perfect teams left in the top five leagues in Europe, but only one team is less than perfect in the relationship department. We're going to discuss that tonight. On the weekend, we saw the youngest player to score a brace in the top five leagues. Who is he? Where does he play? And what big team did he and his father turn down? We'll let you know about that. And in MLS, Diego Valeri set a new record, but it's really Toronto FC that has everyone focused and looking towards the final result at the end of the season. Tonight, we're going to welcome in Victor Canedo from Globo Sport. We have a great interview coming up with him in just about 15, 20 minutes, and excited to be back. First, let me bring in my co-host, Mr. Rojas. Rob, what is going on, man?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you? How was your weekend?
Good, good. You know, I got to say, I think you and I have a better relationship than Neymar and Cavani right now, right?
Hopefully.
But, yeah, we're going to talk. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag just yet, but some interesting stuff. So let's talk real quick. 16 years old, you were scouted, actually, by Manchester United at a youth tournament where United offered your father a job to bring you into the club. And Dad said no because he wanted to see his son play for his beloved team, which is Genoa. And I'm talking about Pietro Pellegrini, who scored a brace this weekend in a 3-2 loss to Lazio. Not the first goal he scored in the Serie A, but 16 years old. They said the images of his father crying on the sidelines after he scored the brace were just, you know, they're moving, truly moving. So, you know, Rob, you know, I know it's not too far away from you, but you remember 16. Could you ever imagine playing at a top five club in Europe and scoring a brace?
The stuff of dreams. It's the stuff that you can only do by playing FIFA or anything else, you know, or playing it with your friends, you know, on a local soccer field, dreaming about playing for your clubs. And I think this goes for a lot of players of their age. I know there are some people, particularly those who are 16, 17, 18, 19, who dream of playing for big clubs like Real Madrid, Barcelona, Manchester United, and so on and so forth. But, you know, with this Pellegrini kid, I mean, this is the stuff of dreams. I mean, scoring a goal, scoring a brace, you know, being the first player born in 2001 to ever score in Serie A, you know, becoming the first to score a brace in a major European league game at just 16, you know, that's the stuff of dreams, honestly. And going back to him and his father rejecting Manchester United, I think that's really something to be proud of, not only as a father, but only as a son, because he wanted to really see I guess his dream was to see his only kid, or well, his kid, play for his beloved boyhood club, and to see him score just makes any parent proud, to say the least.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm looking up the story right now. I'm feverishly looking for it. There was an article by Paolo Bandini, who's actually it was written on The Guardian, where he wrote this story about how he was approached, and I'm just looking it up right now, where he was actually approached by Manchester United, to come in, and they offered dad a job and everything. And I just want to look at the quote, because I want to find where the quote that he gave them, where he wanted basically to see his son play in that Genoa red and blue, you know, something that it's been the family's team forever. You know, I'm trying to find the quote, because it was amazing. It was something like all he would do is, you know, he would just eat and dream of Genoa. That was like his thing. And I just can't. Oh, here we go. The younger Pellegrini likes to joke that he grew up on bread and Genoa. So, you know, think about that. You know, most do it on bread and water. He did it on bread and Genoa. And you know, for those of us in the United States that refer to Genoa as a salami, but it's certainly a way of life there. And at 16, yeah. like Paolo said in the story, and I'm quoting the line, at 16 years old, he knew even then he still had more growing to do and plenty more to show his dad yet, and referring to what would soon come. You know, he's 15 years and 280, he scored his first goal at 15 years and 280 days old in Torino in December of 2016. So
equaling the record of another player, Amadeo Amadi, as the youngest ever Serie A debutant.
Exactly. You know, so where does this kid go? I mean, you know, obviously this is a flash in the pan. This moment in time is a flash in the pan. You know, we can't sit there and put him up on the pedestal just yet, but
Absolutely. But
interesting to see if maybe this kid you know progresses from here. At 16 years old, I believe he's listed at 6'2".
6'4". I'm seeing it here on Wikipedia, but yeah.
So but many equate him structurally to the great Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and you know, obviously he's nowhere near being Zlatan as of yet. But if this kid, the kid has the body structure similar to Zlatan. Now, if he can, you know, duplicate the scoring prowess, that would be something incredibly impressive. So we'll have to see. So, but enough of Pietro Pellegrini, because he's not our opening thoughts guy, even though we just kind of gave that to you as a prelude. But let's do our trivia question, Rob, and then we'll actually get to our opening thoughts, which I think is a little tastier even yet.
Absolutely. So our opening thought, well, I'm sorry, opening thought. Our trivia question is, Sergio Aguero became the fifth player to score six Premier League hat-tricks. Can you name the other four players to have scored more than him, more hat-tricks?
So he scored six hat-tricks.
Can you name the other four who have scored more hat-tricks than him in the Premier League?
In the Premier League. Okay, so let me start a list there.
They're all names you should know.
Yeah, and I know I'm missing. I've got two written down. I'm gonna go with that one as a third. You know what? We'll go with that one because he seems like he's a trivia answer every day now. I'm looking for four names, right?
Yep, four names.
Okay, I've written down four names.
All right.
I doubt any of them are right. Well, I might get one, so I'll give myself credit for one. So, all right, let's jump into opening thoughts tonight, Rob. And initially, you know, I think fair warning, because we kind of made an executive decision here just before showtime. Our original opening thoughts topic was going to be the saga that happened between the Crystal Palace firing Frank de Boer, bringing on Roy Hodgson. Really more of the same on the weekend, Rob, right? Because the goalkeeper at Crystal Palace and the janitor have still scored just as many goals in the league this season as their top striker, right? I mean, in fact, their new manager, Roy Hodgson, so far this year has actually scored the same amount of goals. And that would be 0.0, or the famous Blutarski line. So we were going to talk about that. And it's kind of fun to poke at them at this point, but man, if we got a little bit of girly drama this weekend. I had hinted in the prelude that we have five perfect teams left in Europe. We have Barcelona, who's perfect after four matches, I believe. We have Juventus, Napoli, and Inter. All three of them are perfect after four matches at the moment. And then we have the darlings of Paris, Paris Saint-Germain. Obviously spending an absurd amount of money both on Neymar and Kylian Mbappe. They are perfect after six matches, including winning against Rennes this weekend 2-0. But, Lyon. But having said that, there's some serious drama. So it starts, and I didn't get a chance to see the match, but I saw some of the highlights. It started with, I wanted to say, Rob, did it start with the free kick or with the penalty kick?
I believe it started with the free kick.
With the free kick. Okay, so free kick in the match. Edison Cavani wanted to take it, and Dani Alves stepped in and said, no, his best friend Neymar should take it, and basically pushed Cavani off the ball. So we fast forward a little bit deeper into the match, and there's a penalty kick. By the way, the win over Lyon was a 2-0 victory, and it was two own goals. So there was a penalty kick awarded to PSG in this match, and Cavani went to take it, and I guess Neymar stepped up to him, and Cavani basically told him to take a hike. I'll try to keep it, as Rodney Marsh and Tommy Smith would say, a family show. I'll try to keep it a family show. But he basically told him to take a hike and then promptly misses the penalty. So there's some serious discord. I know people were talking about on radio today that Cavani stopped following Neymar on Instagram and all that kind of, you know, getting into all the stupid stuff that would come along with this. But Rob, obviously there's some discord there. It's not affected them. I mean, they're in first place. They're perfect after six matches. Even when they don't score, they still win. So where does this go, Rob? I'd like your opening thoughts on this topic.
Well, I mean, the first thing that we have to figure out once and for all is if this story is true, that there is some sort of a rift between both Cavani and Neymar. I'm pretty sure that probably tomorrow, within the next few days, that they're both going to deny it. I think that's always been said when we see these type of rifts in this sport. So it's really interesting because it's really more of a war of egos. I mean, these are two wonderful players. I mean, one player who's already dominated French football, and obviously for PSG for a bunch of seasons now, and it's in Cavani, and then there's this new kid on the block with Neymar, who's already starting perfectly well for his new club, you know, wanting to make a stand and really wanting to make a statement. And now with this situation, you know, it's really a battle of egos between two players who really want to be the star of the team and really want to help the team even more. And I like to go here straightforward and say, you know, games aren't won by individuals. It could be argued by that. I mean, maybe some people will have that stereotype of how Messi helps his team more than the team helps Messi or Ronaldo or anything like that, you know. But PSG, you look at that PSG side, it is talented within all levels, all right? Oh, yeah. You know, from goalkeeper, defense, midfield, or even the bench. Even that bench is very good. Mm-hmm. So you look at the situation where you have two players who obviously acted very selfish, both of them, that's easier said than done. Dani Alves as well, you know, I think demonstrated of what he needed to do and probably had to pick sides towards his compatriot. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's something that's really going to, that could hurt PSG in the long term if such situations happen. I mean, if who's to say that, you know, maybe this rift, if it does exist, can really harm them to not only just win the Ligue 1, but to win the Champions League as well. So a lot it has to be made on them. A lot has to be now made on Unai Emery. And, of course, the captain, Thiago Silva, who is also a Brazilian, you know, he's got to act neutral. He can't take sides over his compatriot or over Cavani, who is a Uruguayan and historically have always been rivals. You know, you can't do that. You got to put those things aside, be it being from the same country. No, you are the captain of your club. You are a neutral, basically neutral leader of a democracy of what this club is. So you have to look at it from here. I'm also reading this the report from L'Equipe. the one that reported the story about the possible fight between him and between Cavani and Neymar. It says here that in Cavani's contract, the Uruguayan will receive a premium of about €1 million if he finishes top goal scorer of Liga at the end of the season. So that's probably another reason why he was so eager to take a penalty, because he wants to win top goal scorer. So that, who's to say that bonus isn't in Neymar's as well? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of bonuses and speculation about, you know, what you have to do in order to get more money that you're already receiving. So it's a double standard, basically.
Absolutely. I know. You brought up the one name that I actually wanted to bring up with this whole situation, and that is Unai Emery. Mm-hmm. This is, for me, Rob, this is a simple problem to solve, and it doesn't involve Thiago Silva. It doesn't involve Dani Alves. It doesn't even involve Neymar or Cavani. It involves just Unai Emery and his ability to basically dictate terms at this point. He, as the coach, the technical director, the boss, just really needs to walk in that locker room at the end of the match yesterday and go, listen, you guys cut it out now. You take the free kicks. You take the penalty kicks. Everybody else shut up. And we're done.
And it's his decision.
Exactly.
About who has to take the penalties or the free kicks. You know, you can't really go against a coach's orders.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you said it's a democracy. There is it's a democracy from Thiago Silva's seat, but it's a dictatorship in Unai Emery's seat. You know, because in the end, they're not going to fire Neymar. They're not going to fire Cavani. They're not going to fire Dani Alves. They will fire Unai Emery. Okay? So it's Unai Emery's job. It's his job to determine what they're going to do on the pitch and even off the pitch to an extent. But it's his job to determine what's going to happen. And so he just takes the team. He takes the 18 guys he brought with him. He puts them in the locker room at the end of the match and say, listen, this is nonsense. Okay? You guys are done. Okay? This is how we are going to do it. This is what I say. And if anything ever happens other than that, I will park you on the bench. You know why? Because this team is good enough to win without you.
But imagine the pressure if that happens as well. I mean, just imagine that.
Well, honestly, to be honest, if the bickering continues, then the team falls apart. You see it on the pitch. We have a Chelsea situation, okay? Look at what happened. Well, you know, for me, Chelsea 2 years ago fell apart because – you know, Mourinho didn't have their ear, okay? So they played like whatever. Because let's be honest, that same team came back under Antonio Conte, and all of a sudden they became world beaters. Eden Hazard became the player he was supposed to be. So you can't tell me that the opinion of Mourinho and whatever what was going on had a negative impact. Because I think that did. So from my standpoint, Unai Emery at least comes out and says, listen, you do this, and we're done. And then if they don't do it, he comes out in the press conference and go, listen, I told Neymar to take the penalty kicks. I don't know why Cavani was up there. In fact, Cavani's going to sit the next match, and he's not even going to play. Okay? He's going to sit there on the bench, and he's going to sulk like a little baby until he understands that I tell him, when I say Neymar takes the kicks, Neymar takes the kicks. Okay? And then he follows through on that. And you end up against Saint-Étienne. You end up against Rennes. And you park him on the bench, or even this weekend against Montpellier. You park him on the bench for the entire game. And then you go, okay, see, I told him, he's parked, now let's see what happens next week. You pin it on the players. You put it on them. That's the kind of thing I would bring out of the locker room if I were the coach. Because those players have already done that. They've already brought it out onto the locker room. They've brought it onto the field. They've brought it in front of millions of eyeballs. You know, everybody knew about the Neymar, Dani Alves, Cavani rift in but I think even before the match was over, we saw Twitter start to blow up about it. Mm. So, you know, why not? That was not something Unai Emery did. That's something Neymar and Cavani did. So you know what? Okay, great. You know, Neymar, I told you, Cavani takes the penalty kicks. He's the striker. He takes penalty kicks. You want to fight him? You want to argue with him? The minute you argue with him on the pitch about this, I'm going to bench you in the next game.
And then, of course, then you're going to, and hopefully this doesn't happen, of course, but then you're going to have to look at, you know, possible rifts and possible beef with, you know, agents or anyone in Neymar's crew.
Oh, yeah. No, it could become extremely messy, but I think at the same time, if it falls apart, it's going to fall on Unai Emery's head. You might as well go out swinging. You might as well go out fighting. Why?
At least.
Because otherwise,
at least be humble to it.
Right. Because what'll happen is that you'll take a back seat. You'll let it all happen. The team will fall apart, and they'll walk all over you. And in the end, when the investors want to know what happened to PSG, why didn't this team that we spent over 300 million euro last season in the summer transfer window? Why did this team not win anything? And everyone points to Unai Emery. So I think it's on Unai Emery to at minimum protect himself and say, hey, this is the deal. I'm going to tell you here privately in the locker room, you guys screw up again, it's going to come public, and we're done. And for me, it's not a Thiago Silva thing, and I get it, where Thiago's a countryman, and they're friends and that sort of thing. But I think at this point, you know, the money is too big not to fight it in this manner. For me, the money's too big, and you have to do something about it. So I think, I mean, this is my anticipation, is that next week right. We see this nipped. We don't see a word about it. Everybody hugs. Everybody's happy. We shake hands. We kiss. We make up. Everybody's done with it. I think you see anything other than that, I think this is going to drag on for weeks.
Oh, definitely.
You know, so. But it'll be interesting to see. You know, this is, and again, this team has only given up 3 goals so far in 7 matches on the season, six in league play and 1 in Champions League. Just looking at the stats right now, and just looking quickly, doing some quick math, 26 goals for, 3 goals against, overall this competition season. This season, overall competitions, and unblemished, 7 wins from 7 matches, so. You know, and they've got a leg up right now on Monaco. They've got a leg up on Saint. They got a huge leg up on Saint Etienne. They can run wire to wire here, in Ligue 1, and as we anticipate, because of the strength that they've added on this team, they can do some serious damage in Europe. But they're going to have to get their heads screwed on straight, or else it's going to become a major problem. So that's our opening thoughts for the week. And again, like I had mentioned earlier in the pregame here, we did a wonderful interview with Victor Canedo from Globo Sport that we were able to bring you to tonight. And we're, you know, grateful for having him on the show and giving us a few minutes of his time. And we recorded this with Champions League in mind. So none of the Neymar drama is in this particular interview. So without further ado, Mr. Victor Canedo from Globo Sport. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from Globo Sport is Victor Canedo. Victor, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, and you guys?
Good, fantastic. Thank you for coming on the show. We're glad to have you on. I do want to open the question quickly on a question about Neymar. Obviously, we've completed some of our Champions League matches here this past week. And Neymar, with a great performance, and I believe it was a 5-0 victory over Celtic, a goal and an assist. He scored 5 goals and 5 assists in his 9 appearances for PSG so far this season. So my question to you is this the next step in the evolution for PSG under the project that they're in, where they're advancing their team further and further along?
I guess so. Signing Neymar was a big plan of the project, to be huge, to be across just the continent, not just in France. And that's the PSG. Not just because of Neymar, but now Mbappe, Dani Alves, who has a great character and leadership. So maybe PSG is turning into a great team that could possibly challenge Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich for the next few years or maybe decades. We don't know how long will take this plan of Qatar.
I'm just going to jump in, Victor, and go on to Neymar. Obviously, this has been a situation where a lot of people were talking about how him leaving Barcelona, and he was perfectly comfortable in Barcelona with Messi, with Suarez. He's already won multiple titles there. And now he goes on to PSG as sort of being the main man, the main star at PSG. What do you think has been the reaction in Brazil, and especially for you, about this transfer, and do you think that this is the right move for him to become the best player in the world in the few years?
Yeah, initially I haven't agreed with that move because he was supposed to be the guy in Barcelona just 3 years from now, let's say, because Messi, okay, we have seen how Messi is still great today, but I don't think that Messi will stand up or even play at this level for 5 years. So Neymar was supposed to be that guy, but now he is like proving that PSG will be better, a better team with him, and will challenge the others like equally, at least, I think. Mm. And Neymar probably will be that guy, the best player in the world in the next few years. I believe so, that he has still a chance in this year, because it's a World Cup year, World Cup season. So if Brazil wins it, why not? Can he be the best player in the world?
No, absolutely. And I think if PSG do go and go far in the Champions League, and or even win it, and then Brazil go on to win the World Cup in Russia next year, and he's a major influence, that just is going to prove more and more so that Neymar is the best player in the world. Yeah. So I definitely agree.
In the beginning, people were splitted here, because there are a lot of Brazilian fans of soccer that likes Barcelona, that loves Barcelona. It's almost like a second team, or maybe there's a international team, let's say, because we still have many fans of national teams here, but there's a lot of influence coming up from Europe, and Barcelona is the main team, because there are a lot of Brazilian players in the last decades that play there, Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, Rivaldo, many of them. So people were supposed to believe that he would play for Barcelona for another 10 years, but money talks, all right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We've seen that with a lot of transfers that we've seen this transfer window, that, yeah, money definitely talks, and it's going to continue to talk for the next few years. Looking into the Champions League going forward, obviously we saw a big statement made by Barcelona today, defeating Juventus 3-0 at the Camp Nou. And then we saw other performances like PSG winning 5-0 over Celtic, Bayern Munich winning 3-0, Manchester United winning as well. Which one of these teams you think, and obviously we have matches to play on on Wednesday moving forward, but which one of these teams you think, if Real Madrid does not win the Champions League again, is capable of being the new team of Europe?
Yeah, besides PSG that we have talked about it, probably they will win the league around March, beginning of the April, and they could focus on the Champions League. It's what matters for them. But I do believe that the English teams are ready to challenge, because they were disappointing in the last years. Mm. And now with the second year of Mourinho, second year of Guardiola, a great depth squad. They have deep squad. So I guess they are ready to challenge Real Madrid. And it's okay. It was difficult to win 2 years in a row, but 3 years, mm-hmm. I do not believe.
Yeah, no, of course. I think we talked on the show with another guest of ours yesterday about that, and how only three teams were able to win more than three times in a row, and that's Ajax, Bayern Munich, and Real Madrid back in the early 50s and 60s. So I think that now we're going to see a lot more competition given to other teams across Europe that, you know, not a lot of people can really...
Great, because I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It was boring, you know. We knew that Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern, they would get at least until the semifinals. So there's more unpredictable feeling right now. I don't know who will be at the semifinals. So this will be a great season of Champions League.
Definitely. And I'm just going to stick to my last question and go back to the Brazilian national team. Obviously, Brazil have qualified for the World Cup. They did so when they back in March when they beat Paraguay over there in São Paulo. And it seems that Chichi has been able to find his team. You know, he's been able to use a consistent set of players. More I guess, enthusiasm to the Brazilian team. Do you think that this is the Brazilian team that we will get in Russia next year, or do you still feel that there's going to be a little bit more changes from here on out?
In the first 11, I do not believe that this is the team that, unless, okay, an injury or a player that, like Paulinho. Paulinho is at Barcelona right now. I don't know if he will play consistently to be the guy in the center midfield of Brazil. But I don't think that there's many changes to make. Titi, of course, has plans to play Firmino alongside Jesus. If it's necessarily during the match, but the first 11, I guess, this is that we know, that we are used to know in the last matches of Brazilian national team.
Definitely.
Now, Victor, I'd like to step in here real quick and ask you about the play of another South American player that's a newcomer to his team, and that is the play of James Rodriguez in the 3-0 victory over Anderlecht. I'd like you to rate his play today.
Yeah, I'm sorry because I work at I broadcast the PSG match, so it was at the same time. I couldn't see the highlights, but speaking of James in general, I do believe that he has to fight for his place, his spot in the first 11, because. But it will be tough because Robin and Ribéry, they have the confidence of the fans, of Ancelotti. The good thing of James is that Ancelotti knows him well, and probably asked for his signing, and they could match together, but. It's tough because there's Ribéry, there's Robin, and few spots for James to play.
Agreed. Even with someone like Thomas Müller, who can kind of slide back in that spot, there are limited opportunities. So he's, you know, obviously getting 85 minutes in the 3-0 victory over Anderlecht is probably
that's a good sign. Definitely.
Exactly. So the last one I want to ask you about quickly is the 6-0 victory between Chelsea over Karabag, with a couple of newcomers really contributing there in the in Zappacosta scoring a goal in the 30th minute. And getting
great goal, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and you got
to. I don't know if he was supposed to cross or I don't know. So we have just to ask him because. It was a great goal, but I don't know.
Yeah, and, but not only that, newcomer Timo Bakayoko coming over from Monaco added a goal and an assist. For Chelsea. My question is, and this is something we brought up on our last show: is does Chelsea have enough to be able to compete on all fronts? Given, especially with England, the English sides, especially leading into December, they don't really get a true break like some of the other leagues. So, are the English sides equipped to handle the lengthy season? Are they deep enough to do that?
Yeah, that's the main question because I have seen a lot of managers complain about this. They don't have a winter break, so they play around three times in 1 week in the first week of the year, so it's really tough for them, but I do believe that this is the moment that the English clubs could step up. They need, because they have money, they have more money, they have more strength and depth. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that Chelsea, with today's Zappacosta, Christensen, Batshuayi, that guys that That's don't right. play often, contributing very good. Okay, it was Karabakh, it was an Azerbaijan side, but still, they deliver, right? So right. That's better than a 0-0.
Sure, absolutely. Now, our last question before we let you go, and again, thank you for joining us tonight. We'd like, I know it's early, and I know we asked this of Scott Nichols last week on our last show, and I get it, it's early, but if you had to pick a champion right now, do you think it's Real Madrid like everyone else, or do you think there's another team that we should be focusing on?
No, let's change it. I would say, okay, it sounds ludicrous because they don't have any tradition, but PSG or Manchester City.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know, I am hearing in a few places a lot of people are talking about PSG this time. Manchester City is definitely a new one that we haven't heard yet. I don't know that people, because of the history over the past few years of poor performances by the English sides, that I think a lot of people are shying away from picking them. But they're an incredibly talented team, and you know, they're off to a pretty good start in the Premier League. I know many people, including us, we've picked them to win the Premier League title this year. So why not? Why not pull off that big double and pull the Champions League as well? So I guess it'll just remain to be seen that, you know. Focusing on City for a second, Pep Guardiola, I think, has made a lot of the right moves, even though he may have overpaid for some of them, but really strengthening that back line and getting rid of a lot of the ancillary pieces that really didn't fit in well, I think will serve him well, don't you?
Yeah, he doesn't have excuses right now. So,
no.
Second year, okay, he hasn't won a title last year, hasn't he?
No,
I don't believe he did.
So he has the obligation to perform. That's why City paid so much money for him and gave so much money to build the squad. So he has now Mendy, Danilo, Ederson in the front, Gabriel Jesus, Bernardo Silva. So he has strengthened that enough to fight for both titles.
If he doesn't return silverware this year, does he lose his job?
Any silverware, I would say yes, but that's a tough question. Yeah, because he has a marketing. Okay, he deserved it because he was still a great manager. But
sure.
2 years in a row without a title would be inexcusable.
Like Rob and I have said, a lot of times this is a "what have you done for me lately" sport. It's not only in England, but everywhere. It's "what have you done for me lately?" And even though Guardiola is a great coach, if he hasn't returned that title, people will definitely start to get on him. So, Victor, I want to thank you again for joining us tonight on the show. It was a wonderful interview. We definitely enjoyed it, and we look forward to having you back again sometime soon.
It was my pleasure. Sorry, because my English isn't
your English
was
perfect.
It was perfect. Okay. It was amazing.
Okay, so thank you, guys. My pleasure. Count on me.
All right. Thank you. No, and I want to mention that his English was excellent, if not
perfect.
But thanks again to Victor Canedo for joining us. A couple other things I wanted to point out quickly, Rob. Zappacosta was asked about that play. On his goal, and he said he admitted he was trying to cross the ball. But, you know, he's been noted as being a gifted crosser of the ball. I guess we didn't know he was that gifted, you know. And before I was remiss when we were talking about Pellegrini and the 16-year-old scoring his brace, I meant to mention a very happy birthday to Christian Pulisic today, who turns an ancient 19 years old.
Hey, now you make me feel old. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, there you go. See, all you do, please. I played soccer Thursday night and I was sore on Sunday. Okay. So granted I have to have knee surgery, but you know, still that was difficult. I'm going to say, but yeah, again, thank you to Victor for joining us and giving us a great, great interview. And we're going to definitely get him back again sometime very, very soon. So, Rob, I think before we jump into the week ahead, sir, we should look at the week behind or the past week. And, you know, maybe kick off with the Champions League. We had some big blowouts this week, Rob. You know, I'm just going to scan through the results quickly. But one, two, three, four, five matches in the Champions League this week had four or more goals scored in them. I'm sorry, six. And then we also had, three goals scored by one team was done. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten times in this first round. At least one team scored three or more goals. So, if they're supposed to play defense, there are only two teams that played defense in this first round. And I think it was kind of a surprise. You know, let's lead off with that one because it was actually our first highlighted match of the week for last week. and that matches the Roma Atletico Madrid match. This finished in a 0-0 draw, Rob. You and I had both predicted 2-1 victories for Atleti. Obviously, no goals to talk about in this one. Other than a Perotti yellow card, I mean, just a couple of substitutions and 90 minutes. Now, this is a match you can only see so many, and of course, with me working on the road, I don't get to see many at all, but I can't imagine this one was overly exciting, no?
Probably not, no. Compared to the other games that happened that day, absolutely not.
Agreed. So let's move on to the second game, and that's the Barca-Juve game, which is a matchup of you and me again. We both did predict Barca victories in this one. I went 2-1 Barca. You went 1-0 Barca. We both got it wrong, but if we put our scores together for the most part, we'd have gotten close. 3-0 Barca in this one. And something happened in this matchup that hadn't happened ever. Lionel Messi scoring a goal against Gianluigi Buffon. That had never happened. And he liked it so good in the first half, he ended up doing it twice. So two goals by Messi, a goal by Ivan Rakitic. And this was, I got to tell you, Rob, from what I saw, Juve was decent in the first half. Unfortunate to give up that goal, but, man, just one-way traffic the second half, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, Messi was controlling that game throughout, and he scored a brilliant goal. Both of his goals were brilliant.
Yes, absolutely.
That can't be not whatsoever, but that team just, it was a perfect game for Barcelona, the way that Barcelona plays. Yeah. As for Juventus, you know, it was, I don't want to say poor, because he saw some players that were poor in the second half. The first half they were great, I will admit with that. But then, just in the second half, you know, it was a masterclass by Barcelona for the remaining 45 minutes.
It certainly was. Other tidbit of note here: Mattia De Ciglio went out in the 41st minute with an injury. Turns out, I believe it's a foot injury, which is going to have him out over a month. On the weekend, though, you did see Giorgio Chiellini get back, so starting to get a little healthy, but I still think they miss Bonucci, and I think they miss him way more than they ever expected they were going to. So let's move on. Liverpool-Sevilla. We had predicted, I had this 2-0 for Liverpool. You had it as a 2-2 draw, and because this is the league that you cover both these leagues, you got this one, you got this one on the nose. A Wissam Ben Yedder goal for Sevilla in the 5th minute opened the scoring. We had Roberto Firmino and Mo Salah add goals in the first half to take a 2-1 lead into the locker room. But Correa in the 72nd minute tied this one up for Sevilla. And Roberto Firmino did miss a penalty on this one, Rob, as well. So just going to check the statistics here real quick, because pretty even. Ball possession was dead even. Shots on goal, 24-8 in favor of Liverpool. I'm sorry, shots 24-8. Shots on goal, 7-3 in favor of Liverpool in this one. So, you know, you had this one pegged right on the money, 2-2. I don't know if you got a chance to see this one. I know you and I both saw the Barca match, but again, like we said, you can only see so many of them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So let's go on to the fourth match that we had predicted, and that was the Leipzig-Monaco matchup, where we both predicted 2-1 victories for Leipzig. We were a goal short. We had a Forsberg goal in the 33rd minute for RB Leipzig. Thielmans scored in the 34th minute, the newcomer for Monaco, and that was the end of the scoring in this one, a 1-1 draw overall. You know, just looking at the statistics here again quickly, Leipzig had the bulk of the possession, 57-43. Shots were pretty even. Everything was pretty even in this particular matchup. You know, looking back at this group, Rob, real quick before we leave this matchup, and I'm just hunting it down quickly. Where's my RB Leipzig group? That is going to be Group G. You know, obviously, Besiktas pulling the win off over Porto, which was a little bit of an upset, I think, for you and I, with a 3-1 victory. You still feel like Monaco and Leipzig are going to be the two teams to go through on this group?
I think, looking at the other matches, I believe the Besiktas game ended 3-1 to Porto. I think it's going to be much harder than people expect it to be.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we expected Porto to be the team really pushing the buttons here and possibly messing that up. But it looks like, and we said Besiktas, you know, traveling to Turkey to play a match is always going to be difficult. But I don't think any of us expected this particular result in this match. So let's look at the last matchup that we looked at in the Champions League this week, and that was Tottenham-Dortmund, where I had this as a 3-1 Dortmund victory. You had it as a 2-1 Dortmund victory. I got the score right, but boy, did I blow this team. Song Yung-min in the 4th minute opening the scoring, and then we added a Harry Kane brace in this one to offset a Yarmolenko goal for Dortmund. A 3-1 victory for Tottenham at home. The Jan Vertonghen, they're going to be missing him from the competition due to a red card, multiple yellow card accumulations. But this one, from all by all accounts, was Dortmund held the ball possession, but really the better chances and the better team in the end was Spurs in this one.
Definitely, yes. Really dominating.
Yeah, so let's look at the standings real quick after match day one across the board. PSG and Bayern Munich leading. I'm sorry, I'm one group too short. Man United and CSKA Moscow both winning their opening matches. They're on 3 points each. Group B being led by PSG and Bayern Munich on 3 points each. Chelsea in the group of death currently leading the way after the 6-0 victory over Karabag. We talked about the Roma-Madrid 0-0 draw in second place now. Barca and Sporting both leading Group D with Olympiacos and Juventus on the bottom of the table. Group E sees Liverpool, Sevilla, Spartak, and Maribor all on 1 point at the moment. Looks like that one's going to be a tough one to get through. City and Shakhtar Donetsk are leading the way in Group F, with Napoli dropping a surprise result at home on this one. I'm sorry, they dropped it on the road, 2-1 to Shakhtar, and Manchester City coasting through with a 4-0 over Feyenoord. Group G, we just talked about, Besiktas leading the way, Monaco and RB Leipzig tied on 1 point each. And Group H, Real Madrid and Spurs leading the way, Dortmund and Apoel haven't gotten out of the gate as of yet. The match day two returns back on the 26th and 27th of September, so we will definitely bring you some new matches to talk about in the Champions League next week. The Europa League, Rob, we'll go through our matches there quickly as well. The first one, obviously, that we had predicted was the Atalanta-Everton matchup that was played on Thursday. I had this as a 2-1 victory for Atalanta, and you had this as a 2-2 draw. Even me, I think if I remember correctly, I mentioned this as kind of like my upset call of the week with Atalanta winning. I did not expect Everton to lose this match, but 3-0 to Atalanta. Masiello, Papu Gomez, and Cristiante all scoring goals in the first half for Atalanta in this one. Really not much to speak about from Everton. Neither in this match, and really not on the weekend too, Rob, huh?
It's not been the sorry Joe, but it hasn't been the best start of the season for Everton so far. Given I guess a lot of expectation was given to them beforehand with all the transfers that they got, that they really aren't exceeding expectations.
Yeah, 21 shots taken, 8 on goal in this one for Atalanta in the 3-0 victory. So let's move on to the second matchup, Arsenal FC Cologne. We had this, I had it as a 3-0 Arsenal. You had it as a 2-0 Arsenal. It was 3-1. Goals by Kolasinac, Alexis Sanchez, and Hector Bellerin. And Cordoba actually opened the scoring, and Cologne led at halftime 1-0 in this one. But Arsenal, I guess they maybe shut up Arsene Wenger and did whatever they wanted to do. They held 60% of the possession, over 60%, 15 shots, 7 on goal, leading the way to their 3-1 victory over Cologne. Last one that we had was Hertha Berlin, Atleti Bilbao. I had this as a 2-1 victory for Berlin. You had it as a 1-0. This one ended in a 0-0 draw, so kind of bookending our Roma-Atleti matchup as a 0-0 draw to start our discussion. This one finished as a 0-0 draw as well. Match was pretty even otherwise. Possession was pretty even. Shots were pretty even. So really nothing to speak about in this one. So just looking at the Europa tables quickly, and I won't go through all of them. Villarreal leading the way in Group A. Dynamo Kiev in Group B. Braga in Group C. AC Milan with a 5-1 victory with AEK Athens leading Group D. Atalanta leading Group E. Zlin, Copenhagen, Lokomotiv Moscow, and Sheriff Tiraspol. I got to find out where they're from. The Sheriff is tied. Everybody's tied on 1 point after 0-0 draws in Group F. Group G sees FCSB and Beersheba leading the way on 3 points. Arsenal leading Group H on 3 points. Marseille leading Group I. Östersunds leading Group J. Nice and Lazio leading Group K. And Zenit and Real Sociedad leading Group L in this one. Again, match day two returns on the 28th, and we'll have more matches for you there. So,
what's the name of that club, Joe?
I closed it, thanks.
I think Sheriff, right?
Something like Sheriff something.
Moldova.
They're in Moldova. Okay, might be my newest favorite team or somebody I'm going to have to go get a jersey from, that's for sure. So, But that was our match of the week. Last week, we did not give you any league matches because we wanted to focus mainly on Champions League with Scott Nichols and then with Victor Canedo in the interview as well. So, but this week we're returning our leagues. So, Rob, I would say that we lead off our leagues, tables, match of the week that we've got coming up this week, and our goal scorers. We've got midweek matches, everyone, in La Liga, Serie A, and the Bundesliga. And although it didn't make our Italy discussion. This is the big derby this weekend. So, Rob, over to you for La Liga, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want me to just give you the table as it stands?
Yeah, let's do it. Tables first, and then we'll go with match of the week.
Sure. Barcelona are still top of the league with 12 points. They are perfect with 4 straight wins, no draws and no losses. In second is Sevilla with 10. In third, Real Sociedad with 9. In fourth, Real Madrid with 8 points. In fifth, Atletico Madrid with 8 points. And in sixth place, Athletic Bilbao with 7. Running off the relegation zone is Deportivo La Coruña with 1 point in 18th. And Malaga and Alaves both on 19th and 20th respectively, with both of them not able to get a single point from their first 4 games as of yet. Top goal scorers are Lionel Messi with 5, Maxi Gomez with 3, Juanmi with 3 as well, Gareth Bale with 2, and Marcos Asensio with 2, but it is a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 way tie between Gareth Bale, Asensio, Adoriz, Joaquin, Sergio Leone, Fede Calabria, and Koke, all on 2 goals respectively. Our match of the week is going to be on Saturday at 12. It's Atletico Madrid against Sevilla, 5th against 2nd with a 2-point gap. We saw Atletico Madrid debut their new stadium, the Wanda Metropolitano, the other day, courtesy of a 1-0 victory, I believe, against Malaga. Yep, that's right.
Courtesy of Griezmann.
Yep. So I'm going to have to favor Atletico Madrid in this one. I think the momentum following the inauguration of the new stadium will go back to this team on Saturday. I'm going to take them in a 2-1 victory.
2-1 for Atleti over Sevilla on the weekend. And Rob, that was 12 o'clock Spain time. It's actually Saturday, 7 a.m. East Coast.
Okay.
Yeah, so you know, make some coffee. Let's head over to Ligue 1 quickly, where we had mentioned earlier in the show, PSG currently leading the way. They are perfect. 6 matches, 6 wins, 18 points. Monaco 3 points back on 15 points. Saint-Étienne in third on 13. Bordeaux on 12. Lyon on 11. Then we have Marseille and Nantes rounding out the top 7 on 10 points each. Keeping in mind, they are 6 matches in. Bottom of the table looks like this. Metz on 3 points. Strasbourg on 4. Dijon on 4. And then just outside the relegation zone, we have Lille, Troyes, and Rennes all on 5 points apiece. Our top goal scorers currently in Ligue 1 look like this. Radamel Falcao has gone off to an incredible start. He's on 9 goals. Edson Cavani on 7 goals. Clinton Jai on Marseille on 5 goals. And then we have Diaz at Lyon and Diaz, Fekir, and Neymar all on 4 goals apiece, rounding out the top 6, believe it or not. Just outside, tied with a slew of other players, is one and only Mario Balotelli, who scored a spectacular goal on the weekend. Our match of the week this week, since there's drama, we might as well keep an eye on them. It's going to be the PSG-Montpellier match at Montpellier. This matchup is Saturday, 11 a.m. Currently, expected to miss this match are Javier Pastore and Angel Di Maria, both nursing injuries, and CO for Montpellier is going to be nursing a red card and out on this one. The head-to-head matchup for these two teams, just looking back at most recent history, PSG winning the last matchup 2-0, but prior to that, Montpellier with a 3-0 victory. Then we go back to March 5th of 2016 to a 0-0 draw. So PSG, in their last 5 matches against Montpellier, have only scored 3 goals. I don't think that's going to be the case this time around. In fact, I think they'll score at least 3 goals on this day. I'm going to take them in a 3-0 victory over Montpellier on the road. And again, I expect all the nonsense that they went through during the week to be all wrapped up and them back on the straight path. So, Rob, over to you, sir, for the Premier League.
Yes, absolutely. In the Premier League, this is how the table stands after just 5 games. Manchester United are still perfect with 13 points, followed by their noisy neighbors in second, also on 13 points. In third is Chelsea with 10 points following their draw against Arsenal over the weekend. In fourth is Newcastle, out of all teams, with 9 points. In fifth is Spurs with 8 points. Running up the other teams, we have Liverpool in 8th with 8 points. Arsenal in 12th with 7 points. Leicester in 15th with 4 points. Running out the relegation zone, we have Everton in the relegation zone at the moment. Not a good start for them so far this season. They're in 18th place with 4 points, followed by Bournemouth in 19th with 3 points. And Crystal Palace, the only team to have not won a single game yet under their new manager, Roy Hodgson, is in 20th with 0 points. So it's not looking good for Crystal Palace at the moment. Top goal scorers are Romelu Lukaku with 5, with Sergio Aguero sharing the same amount. In third is Jamie Vardy with 4th, with him sharing it with Gabriel Jesus. And in fifth is, well, it's a three-way, it's a 1-2-3-4-5-6-way tie for with 3 goals. For fifth and, from 5th to 10th, it's Danny Welbeck, Alvaro Morata, Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, Anthony Martial, and Raheem Sterling, all on 3 goals as well. And our match of the week is going to be Southampton against Manchester United Saturday at 10 a.m. As I mentioned, Manchester United are still top of the table with 13, while Southampton are in 9th place with 8 points. I think the fine start with Manchester United is just going to really continue. I think Mourinho has really gotten this team to play very, very well. And I'm going to have to give the advantage to, you know, to the Red Devils. I think they're going to win easily here. 2-0.
2-0. The only thing that would concern me with Manchester United is, and we saw it again on the weekend, they left a lot of their goals late. They were up 1-0, and granted in control, but it was up until maybe the, God, I want to say it was the 70th minute, Rob, somewhere in that ballpark. And the final score was 4-0. The final score was 4-0, but they didn't score most of their goals until the very last 15, 20 minutes of the match. So,
yeah, I got it right here.
Yeah.
I could just mention it real quick.
Please.
Yeah, the goals came in the 4th minute from Valencia, then three goals in the span of 7 minutes, the last 7 minutes of the game. Mkhitaryan in the 83rd, Lukaku in the 89th, and Martial in the 91st.
You know,
so, yeah.
Yeah, and not to suggest that they were going to lose that match, although they did kind of step out on the back foot at the start of the second half. But, you know, they soon regained control, and they were in the driver's seat. But you just worry about a team that leaves the goals so late like that, that maybe it could come back to haunt them a little bit somewhere down the road. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Also, in a quick little other EPL note that I have for you, Rob, DeAndre Yedlin playing 90 minutes this week for Newcastle United. So it looks like he's back on the mended track. And for Americans, got to be happy that maybe we'll see him in these last round of qualifiers in October.
Definitely.
Yeah, so let's move over to Italy.
Yep.
4 matches in Italy, and we have 3 perfect teams. Napoli currently leading the tables, only by goal differential. They scored, they had a huge victory on the weekend, 6-0 over Benevento. They're currently on 12 points, as well as Juventus with a 3-1 victory over Sassuolo, a Paulo Dybala hat-trick, and Inter with a perfect record at the moment as well on 12 points. Right behind them, we see Lazio on 10 points, AC Milan on 9 points, Torino on 8, then just outside the European position, Sampdoria on 7, Roma on 6 with Fiorentina and Cagliari rounding out the top 10. The relegation zone has Benevento, no points, 1 goal in 10 and 4 matches, 10 against. Verona on 1 point and Crotone on 1 point as well. Crotone has not scored a goal yet this season. Then just outside the relegation zone to Sassuolo, Genoa, Udinese, and Spal. I really think that, Rob, we may have our three relegated teams in the Serie A set up already in Crotone, Verona, and Benevento. It looks like neither of them have any fight for anybody in the league this year. So something to keep an eye on. Our top scorers in the league currently, Paulo Dybala, 8 goals. Like I said, added 3 this weekend. Chiro Immobile in second on 6 goals. Then we have Mauro Icardi on 5, tied with Dries Mertens on 5, who also had a hat trick on the weekend. Rounding out the top 5 is the old man, Fabio Quagliarella, on 4 goals for Sampdoria. I guess we'll have to start calling him the eternal one. In our match of the week, the big derby, Derby della Mole. It is Juventus-Torino, Saturday 2:45 p.m. This is going to be held at the J Stadium. just taking a look at the past record between these two, which is always a big fight. Last matchup, which was May 6th, led to a 1-1 draw. Juve winning the previous two matches from there, 3-1 and 4-1. I'm sorry, actually won the last four besides that one. One of those matches in the Coppa Italia, a 4-0 victory back in December 16th of 2015. So looking at this one, Juve's looked really, really good in league this year, and I don't see that changing here. I'm going to go with a 2-0 victory for Juventus in this one, and to keep that one of those top spots in the Serie A. So, Rob, over to you for the Bundesliga, sir.
Absolutely. In the Bundesliga, we have a midweek game. It's a midweek game that we're going to have tomorrow. But before that, I'll mention the table. In first place is Borussia Dortmund, one of the only three teams to have gone perfect so far this season. I haven't lost a single game yet, and that's Borussia Dortmund. In first with 10 points, followed by, out of all teams, Hannover 96 is in second with 10 points. In third is Bayern Munich with 9. In fourth, Schalke with 9 as well. In fifth, Hoffenheim with 8. In sixth, Leipzig with 7. Rounding off the relegation playoff spot is Freiburg with 2. Werder Bremen with 1. And FC Cologne, being the only team in the Bundesliga, have not gotten a single... you're right. They are the only team to have not gotten a single point yet in the Bundesliga this season, with 0 points as it stands. Top goal scorers are Robert Lewandowski with 5, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang with 4, followed by Finn Bogan, son of Augsburg, and Timo Werner, all with 4 as well. And then there's a 1-2-3-way tie with 3 goals for 5th, is Lecky from Hertha Berlin, Harnik from Hannover with 3 as well, and Mark Ucht as well from Hoffenheim. So our match of the week is going to be Schalke against Bayern Munich. The game is at 2:30. The game will be in Schalke. And it's actually a battle for to see who will go first or second, to be fair. Both teams are with 9 points. Both are with a 2-goal difference between each other in third and fourth. But I think with the run of form that Bayern Munich have been going in, you know, there's been some rumors of a possible rift that Ancelotti has gotten. I don't know if you've seen that, Joe.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, there were some rumors about some sort of rift of Bayern Munich regarding certain players not playing or anything along those lines. You would have to check it on Twitter or any other website later after the show. But as it stands, you know, this is a really good game to watch for tomorrow. But I think it would give the advantage to the away side here. I think Bayern Munich have just enough to really give Schalke a really good game to get the 3 points that they need. I'm going to say 2-1 Bayern.
2-1 Bayern in this.
And of course, this is coming. Sorry, Joe, just forgot to mention. This will also mean that they won't have Manuel Neuer, so that's going to be a big loss for them, not only in the Bundesliga, but in their Champions League games as well, and even in the Pokal. So it could be much more harder for Bayern Munich to get that goal, assuming it's going to be Ulrich in the as a goalkeeper. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be much harder for Bayern Munich now to regain momentum.
Two things I want to ask you, Rob. One sure. about Neuer, and one about European play in general. So let's look at Manuel Neuer first. Again, we received word that he suffered another foot injury. He's going to be out, I think, a month. They said, right, Rob?
A few months.
It's going to be a few months. So, and he's just coming off a foot injury previously, which saw his season end early last year. You start to question his durability when you're seeing multiple injuries like this. So, my question to you is: when we sat here last year and we would have talked about this topic, we would have said Manuel Neuer is the best goalie in the world, number one. We probably would have put Gigi Buffon at number two, and then. You know, I don't know if we'd have gone to Courtois or somebody at number three, but we would have gone Neuer and Buffon right now, one and two. With the repeat injury here to Neuer, where we're going to be missing him now since I'm gonna guess it was March, Rob, since he's really played ball. And we've seen, for me personally, I've seen a certain drop off in Gigi Buffon's ability, especially over the past couple of months. I don't think we put either of them as the number one goalkeeper in the world right now.
No.
Would you agree with that?
I would, because I think the best goalkeeper in the world right now, in terms of form and the way that they're playing, mm-hmm. is David De Gea.
Agreed. I think he has surpassed both Buffon and Neuer right now as the top goalkeeper in the world.
On form, of course. Overall, it would be a different story, but on form at both the men are playing, yeah, I have to give the advantage to De Gea.
Yeah, when you talk about historical perspective, yeah, definitely, it's definitely not De Gea. You know, it's definitely the other two guys we mentioned, and Iker Casillas would be one of the other names that you would throw in there because he's still playing. So on a historic perspective, I agree with you 100%, but I think currently on form right now, if you needed a goalkeeper to win a game, it's going to be David De Gea right now.
And of course, you have to look at other goalkeepers who are doing well in Europe. I mean, you have goalkeepers maybe like Marc-Andre Ter Stegen or Keylor Navas or I don't know. Give me another name that I think should be considered.
Even Pepe Reina's only given up 2 goals right now for Napoli. I mean, you don't normally think of him as one of the top keepers, but Napoli managed to hold on.
What's his name? Berkey Adorman. He hasn't given up a goal yet as well.
Absolutely. He's another one that's top form. So Berkey would definitely be one of those guys you'd want to look at as one of your goalkeepers. You mentioned Courtois. You know, so there's plenty of guys out there that you would definitely point the finger at. But yeah, it's just we may have at this point finally seen the passing of the baton. That is the great goalkeepers moving on to the next level or the next age of goalkeepers. And I look back on the goalkeepers that we've looked at and just say to myself, you know, we were blessed, Rob. Over the past 3, 4 years, 5 years, we were really blessed with some of the goalkeeping talent that we were able to watch. We'll never see the likes of them again, I don't think. At least a crop like this. I don't know. It's we certainly lived in a pretty good age. But the other thing I want to ask you, is we're starting to see some injuries pop up on some of these players. And now we see midweek matches in La Liga, Serie A, and Bundesliga this week. We had Champions League midweek last week. We've got Champions League midweek next week. Is it time to start looking at these schedules and start paring them down or lengthening them out?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially with the last international break that's going to be happening in a couple of weeks.
And that's going to throw another monkey wrench in the system too.
And now is not the time to get injured. This is probably the worst time to get injured. Here on out and maybe into the start of next year, like January, February, March, you do not want to be injured.
It's a disaster. It's a disaster because now you're looking at missing matches for your club and you're looking at missing enormous matches for your country that you won't get to play in for another 4 years. So
in the World Cup, of course.
Yeah, it's huge. This is that one time where you want to do everything the doctors and the trainers say, that's for sure. So
And they know their shit.
Yeah, they do. They do. So, you know, hopefully we don't see anything catastrophic.
Sorry, Joe, just one more thing. I mean, I think that's what we've seen with another guy who got injured over the weekend with Dembele, you know.
Yes, and
his hamstring.
And he's out what 3-4 months.
Yes.
Yeah. So Ousmane Dembele avulsing his hamstring and having surgery. I think he had surgery today for that. So you know, yeah, that's another huge loss. Let's turn around. Let's come across the pond, Rob, and let's look at the MLS. We're going to visit back here now. Let's look at the tables quickly. I'm going to start at the Eastern Conference because I think the Western Conference table in general is a little tastier. So the Eastern Conference, Toronto FC currently still on their historic run. They're on 62 points after 29 matches played. They are definitely within striking distance of hitting 77 points and setting a record. NYCFC on 51 points in second place. Then we see the Chicago Fire on 48, which really they've taken a little bit of drop off because if you remember, they were leading the table for a little while there towards the middle of the season. Columbus Crew on 44 points. Atlanta United, who's had a nice little run. They're unbeaten in their last four. They're on 43 points. Also setting that record or tying that record with a 7-0 victory over the New England Revolution at home there. Setting the record for largest goal difference in a victory. New York Red Bull holding the last playoff spot currently on a series of 4 draws. They are on 42 points. Then it is 6 points back to the Montreal Impact. The Revs on 35 points, Orlando City on 35, the Union on 33, and DC United on 28 points. The Western Conference, much tighter at the top of the table. Vancouver Whitecaps currently leading the way on 45 points. And we have the Timbers, Sporting KC, and the Seattle Sounders, who are also on 4 straight draws, on 44 points as well. San Jose Earthquakes on 39. Then we have 3 teams tied for the final playoff spot. Real Salt Lake, Houston Dynamo, and FC Dallas. Talk about how the mighty have fallen, Rob. The two Texas teams, at one point were 1-2 in the Western Conference, and now they are 7-8. So really taking a hard look at their seasons right now. Just behind them, Minnesota United on 29 points. The LA Galaxy having a disaster this season on 27 points. And the Colorado Rapids last place in all of MLS on 26 points. Our top goal scorers currently in MLS, David Villa on 19 goals. Nemanja Nikolić on 18. Diego Valeri, who, again, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, setting a record for scoring goals in 8 straight matches. He is currently on 18 goals as well. Omar Kamara on 16, and Joseph Martinez at Atlanta on 16 goals as well. I'll round out the top 10 for everybody. Sebastian Giovinco on 15, Ignacio Piatti on 15, Bradley Wright Phillips on 15, and then David Akam at the Chicago Fire on 14, and Kubo Torres at Houston on 14 goals as well, rounding out the top 10. So our match of the week this week, wanted to keep with the history. It's another derby. It's a Canadian derby in this one, where we have Toronto FC facing the Montreal Impact. This matchup is a midweek match as well, Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. in Toronto. Benoit Cherrier is going to be missing out on this one with a calf injury, and Haglund with a knee injury for Toronto. Montreal coming in completely healthy. Looking at the head-to-head previously for these two teams, Toronto has won the last two matchups 3-1 back on August 17th. And in June 17th, Toronto won at home 2-1 in this particular tie. And I don't see any reason not to have Toronto win again. I'm going to take Toronto in a 2-0 victory over Montreal in this one. I'm starting to think that we're going to see some history out of the Toronto FC. It's just a matter of, can they run across the finish line? This was a question that was asked, Rob. If Toronto sets the record for points in a season, they win the Supporter Shield, points in a season, but they don't win MLS Cup, is this season a success or a failure?
Failure. The reason why, I'll tell you this, because we've seen that with other teams as well, not just in soccer, but across sports as well, who aren't able to win various titles or any title at the start of the season. You mentioned a good example would be the New England Patriots losing the Super Bowl, or the Golden State Warriors losing when they had the best record in the NBA. But it's really hard to determine. I mean, this is a different sport, a different style. I mean, if you compare this to maybe what they do in the Premier League or anything like that, maybe it's a different story. But it just seems like, no, I don't think so.
I agree.
Honestly, I think it's different because there aren't really, it's a bit different because there's not really playoffs usually to determine a champion. So it's really hard to determine.
I'm with you 100% though. I think, in the end, it's a sad reflection because they'd be so successful and it'd be such an accomplishment over the course of the season. But at the same time, like you said, it would be deemed as a failure because it's a what have you done for me now world. It is, success is best based on what you do in the last 24 hours. And if they don't manage to bring home MLS Cup with the talent that they have in the team, it's going to be considered a failure, unfortunately. And I think it's a sad state for them that would be the case. But it's a sad truth. So that's going to be our week ahead. Again, I'm just going to recap the matches. Atletico Madrid, Sevilla, Saturday, 7 a.m. for La Liga. Ligue 1 is going to see Montpellier host PSG at Saturday at 11 a.m. In the EPL, Southampton is going to host Manchester United on Saturday at 10 a.m. In Serie A, the Derby della Mole, which is Juventus-Torino, which Saturday, 2:45 p.m. The Bundesliga is going to see a great midweek matchup between Schalke-Bayern Munich on Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. And the MLS match of the week for us is going to be the Montreal Impact-Toronto FC in Toronto Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. So, Rob, we are back at the trivia question. So if you want to repeat the trivia question.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll go back to the trivia question. Sergio Aguero became the fifth player to score 6 or more hat-tricks in the Premier League. Can you name the other 4 to have scored more hat-tricks in the Premier League?
So I wrote down Alan Shearer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good?
He is number 1 with 11 hat-tricks in his Premier League career.
I wrote down the guy that is not allowed to drive for a few months, Wayne Rooney.
No.
I wasn't sure. I went with two other names that I thought would be, you know, their reaches, but I think they could have potential. One guy that we've talked about in terms of goal scoring recently is Romelu Lukaku.
No.
Nope. How about Luis Suarez?
Nope.
Cristiano Ronaldo?
Nope.
Michael Owen?
Yes.
Okay, so that's...
with eight.
Okay, so I got Owen. All right, so I only got one name right. I got Alan Shearer right. Owen Shearer, and I'm missing two more.
This is a name that usually comes up in the in these Premier League trivia questions.
It's not Ryan Giggs. It's not those guys. Is it Beckham?
It is not Beckham.
Okay.
I French guy.
Oh, is it Thierry Henry?
It is.
Okay. How about Robin Van Persie?
Nope.
Oh, how about Ruud van Nistelrooy?
Nope. You're getting the first letter right of their first name.
It's not Ryan Giggs.
It is not.
Okay.
Played for Liverpool various years.
Man, who am I missing? Who am I missing? All right, kill me. All right, give it to me because it's only
Robbie Fowler.
Robbie Fowler. I always forget him. All right, so it was Fowler, Owen, Shearer, and oh god, who's the last one I just said?
Henry.
Thierry Henry. Thank you.
Yep. So as it stands, the players with the most Premier League hat tricks are as follows: Shearer with 11, Robbie Fowler with 9, Owen and Henry with 8, and Sergio Aguero now with 6.
And that's our trivia question of the week. And I get stumped again. So, all right. So, Rob, you know, without any further ado, we did wish Christian Pulisic a happy birthday. We'll do it again. Actually, there was one other birthday that actually showed up on my timeline here, Rob, real quick. And that's Joseph Sexton.
Happy birthday to him.
Happy birthday to him as well. That showed up this week as well. So, let's hit the closing music.
Absolutely.
Let's do it. I kind of hit it prematurely just a minute ago. As I was preparing for the close of the show. So for episode 176 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Victor Canedo from Globo Sport for joining us tonight. Next week, we are going to have Matt Santangelo from These Football Times and Football Italia, somebody I'm very, very excited to speak to. It's going to be lots and lots of fun. So for episode 176 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
Rodoro Huss.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.